Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking with you today about DNA testing. It's kind of the rage these days for amateur genealogists. Sometimes it can be difficult to make sense of the results. I went to Ancestry.com and signed up and got my reading back so we can talk a little about mine, but I want to hear about yours too. And maybe if you're thinking about having your DNA tested, this would certainly be a good show for you to keep listening to. Mary Eberle with me in the studio. She's an experienced genealogist. I had trouble saying that. I'm sorry. DNA expert. She's also the owner of DNA Hunters, among other things. She helps clients understand their DNA test results. You can join in the conversation. Maybe you have a question about DNA testing, maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And Mary, thank you for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Larry. I'm looking forward to talking about your test results and answering questions.
For sure. Well, to start with, why I had my DNA tested? Because I knew you were going to be on, and I thought, you know what? It'd be kind of fun to at least talk about that a little bit, but why do most people want to do it?
Well, a lot of people test for the ethnicity information, and that's definitely the way that the testing companies are marketing their test. You know, we've got those ads on TV, you know, trading in your kilt for the lederhosen kind of thing. So it's a lot of people are doing it for that reason, and then a lot of people are doing it for genealogy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's pretty easy. I was surprised at how, frankly, easy it was to do.
Right.
A little bit of spit.
Right. Right. Ancestry uses the spit. 23andMe and Family Tree DNA, they don't use spit, but they give you this little Q-tip thing that you put inside your mouth and, you swab.
Well, so it's very easy to do. And, you know, Ancestry.com and 23andMe are the ones that probably advertise, or at least I see the most on television. They're two of the bigger ones, for sure. But there are plenty more.
Right, right. I mentioned Family Tree DNA, and we used to refer to those three companies as the big three.
Okay.
And now we actually have two more in the mix. MyHeritage is now doing DNA testing. They historically were a genealogy website, and then but now they're offering DNA testing, and also Living DNA out of the UK is offering DNA testing.
So as you look at this, how do you decide which one is the best for you?
Well,
tough to do.
It depends. I like to have people start at Ancestry, and that's because it has the largest number of testers, so they have the biggest database at about 10 million people. So that, you know, it's going to increase your chance of finding good matches for most people if you test at Ancestry. But then there are pros and cons to everything, and, you know, there are pros to some of the other testing sites also.
Yeah, it was interesting for me to get I'm looking down the list, and one of my daughters, of course, popped up as the top because she had already done her had her DNA tested through Ancestry.com. But looking down a list of people, and as we were looking at it, I have a lot from England because that's about 41% of my ethnicity estimate is England, but popped up, Ireland popped in there and Scotland, and then I see some names, as you were pointing out to me. I've got a James Campbell in there and another Irish name or two as well. And so I think I'll just probably take a look and see what's on their sites.
Oh, neat. Right, right. A lot of times people are then, this is like a way to get into genealogy where you do the DNA test and you see something interesting like that. And then you build a tree and you try to put those matches into your tree. And then you're up until, you know, 3 a.m.
Well, we have callers online. Maybe we should take a call right off the bat here. Peter in Viroqua, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, both my daughter and my mother-in-law were really into genealogy, but did it the old-fashioned way, never done the DNA. But ultimately, though, I guess I'm just curious, are there, like, major groups of humans that we're all related to, and can we ultimately, do you think, be traced back to, like, a really core group somewhere?
Definitely. Scientists have published studies showing that modern humans arose in Eastern Africa 150 to 200,000 years ago. So if you get in the time machine and you want to go visit your ancestors, you know, you have to definitely say, like, how far back do I want to go? Do I want to go 100 years or 5,000 years or 150,000 years? And depending upon where you set that dial, you'll end up in a different place. And but you're right that if you go back far enough in time, we're all related.
It was interesting to me that I think it goes back to about 1750 or something on my site. And there's a little screen you can jump from 1750 to 1800 or whatever. And you can see people coming across from England or whatever to the U.S., where they landed in the U.S., and then moving on to eventually to Wisconsin. It was kind of fun to see over a couple hundred-year period how people moved around.
Right. Was that in the... I saw that you also, in addition to getting the breakdown on the ethnicity estimates, at Ancestry they give you migrations.
Yes, and that's what I'm talking about, the migrations, the movement. It was interesting to see. I really enjoyed it. Peter, thank you for calling. Let's go to Lisa in Wausau. Lisa, hi to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, the reason we haven't done any ancestry testing, we'd like to, but my concerns are that this test results are given out for public knowledge to be used to find relatives of criminals or to find criminals with the DNA. And I think that that's really unfair. If you want to find genealogy, that's great. But it shouldn't be given out for public knowledge.
So how much, well, there is a lot of public knowledge being shared on these, Mary.
Right. And for living people, their information, like their names and birth dates and locations, aren't provided. But I think that what the caller is referring to is that about 2 weeks ago, it was announced that the police were using, and I say using in quotes, a genealogy website that included 900,000 people's DNA information, and that through that they were able to identify a suspect in the Golden State Killer case, which is it had been a cold case for 30 years, and then they realized that the methods that we genealogists use are very good at identifying people. So I think that, you know, that there was quite a bit of coverage for that.
So If you're a criminal, it might not be a good thing to do.
Well, we don't need the criminal to test. We can identify suspects, based on cousin matches. So, for example, if you had a second cousin who tested, and then we're knitting together those trees and able to identify criminals and victims. So this actually has been used quite a bit for victim identification and MIA cases from, World War II or whenever, when there's enough DNA sample there, we are able to help identify those people.
Very interesting. Lisa, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. I'm having some trouble reading what's on the screen here, so we'll not look at that for the moment. Some of the information given doesn't have a whole lot of context. So how do you better understand the results? What's the best? Probably go to somebody like you.
Right. And I offer workshops. I'm teaching here on campus through the Wisconsin Historical Society, but I also teach throughout the country, and other people are doing that also. So if you're able to attend a genealogy conference, a lot of times there will be DNA talks, and sometimes the whole workshop is set up specifically to go through DNA.
So you could bring a laptop along with you to those and then be clued in and actually be able to do some things while you're at those workshops.
Right. A lot of people do bring their laptops.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense to me. What's the hardest thing for most people when it comes to figuring things out? What questions do you get the most often?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the hardest things is just navigating the website, you know, where you tested, and then understanding, you know, there's so much information. You're given anywhere from 1,000 to 20,000 matches, and you're, you know, it's a lot of information. So understanding how you look at your matches, there are oftentimes questions about ethnicities, and it just takes digging in and understanding, for example, how the ethnicity estimates are created.
How are they created?
Well, each company has a reference panel consisting of people that they have selected to represent a continent or a region or a subregion, and they test them and they find differences between them in the DNA test results. And they're using that reference panel and then their algorithm to analyze your test result.
I got you. So there's some base people that baseline people that they use, and from that's how they grow it out.
Right. And the fact that each company has their own reference panels and their own algorithm results in differences. You know, if you test a company A and then B, and then you say, oh boy, these don't add up, they're not the same. Well, a lot of times that's because of those different reference panels and the different algorithms. And
okay, so if I tried somebody other than Ancestry.com, I might get somewhat different results, probably close.
Right. There are really specific things also, like if you have ancestors from Austria, two out of the three testing companies put them in Europe West, and the other one puts it in Europe East. So then, you know, it's like, this doesn't make sense. And oftentimes, you know, people just say it's wrong.
But it's more a question of how they categorize things, rather than it's wrong.
Right.
Okay. Let's take another call. Jody in Madison, it's your turn.
Hi, Mary. This is Jody.
Hi, Jody.
The Jody that you know.
Hi.
How are you? I was calling because I see things that you posted about helping people with adoptive families, and I wanted to know if you could talk about that more.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have a lot of clients who are adoptees or other people with unknown parents, and I look through their DNA matches. I also use the ethnicity estimates, and I build trees based on their matches. And then I'm trying to connect those trees and looking for the overlap.
Okay.
And I'm also looking at how close the matches are. So, for example, if you're an adoptee and you're really lucky and you get a first cousin match, that means one of each of your parents is siblings.
Oh.
So, you know, that's that should be pretty straightforward. But if your closest match is a third cousin, you know, then it means you share second great grandparents, and then it can be, you know, weeks or months or years
to figure it out.
You know, it just depends.
Really interesting. Thanks, Jody, for calling. Appreciate it. We're talking today with Mary Eberle, who is an expert in genetic genealogy. She's a DNA expert. She has her own company, DNA Hunters, a company that helps find biological parents and relatives. Great to have her with us. You can join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network. Talking about reading your ancestry DNA report today with our guest, Mary Eberle. She owns DNA Hunters, a company that helps find biological parents and relatives. Larry Mueller here. We'll take some calls. Jean and Madison up next. Hi, Jean. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to share a story. My brother-in-law had his DNA tested. I'm not exactly sure what prompted him to do so in the first place, but what he discovered was that the man he thought was his father all during his life was not indeed his father, because his DNA matched another man. And he discovered that he had three half-sisters because of the DNA. And now he's, I guess, connected with a couple of those half-sisters and has, you know, discovered a family that he never knew about. It was a secret his mother took to her grave.
Wow, and that's probably not the first time. Thank you very much, Jean, for calling. That's probably not the first time you've heard that, Mary.
Right, right. We have people testing. I helped a woman. She was 73 years old and a genealogist, and she did DNA testing, and lo and behold, her father wasn't her father. And so it's always important, if you're asking people to test, to let them know that things like that might come up. And then also, if you can ask them, you know, if I find something like that, do you want to know? Because sometimes we're holding that information and, you know, you just don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that in this situation, Gene, that there was a good reunion and the family was open and accepting.
And there have been times when that wasn't the case, unfortunately.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thanks for calling and sharing that. Let's go to Phil in Winchester next. Phil, hi.
Yes. I was listening before, and I wanted to mention there's an author named Brian Sykes who wrote The Seven Daughters of Eve, explaining we're all related to one of these seven women. And he also wrote DNA USA for those that are interested in this topic.
Mary, are you familiar with that author? Thanks, Phil, for calling.
Yeah, I am. And actually, I have ancestors from Winchester. So I wonder if we are cousins.
Maybe.
So I'm looking for Native American genealogy. I think a great.
Oh, we lost him. I'm sorry. So Native American genealogy, comment on that?
Sure. I know that the Wisconsin Historical Society either has a workshop planned or just had a workshop on Native American genealogy, and they were holding it in Ashland. So I'm not sure if that has already happened. With respect to DNA and Native American heritage, I know that Blaine Bettinger just gave a talk at the National Genealogical Society, and I believe that the recording is available. He talked about those two things, and I sat in the lecture, and it was excellent, so I highly recommend that.
So where would Phil go to find that, do you think?
I think, the National Genealogical Society, I would Google that, and probably Blaine Bettinger's name or recordings, and
would pop up.
I think it would pop up.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Phil, appreciate it. And on to Marlene in Nakusa. Hi, Marlene.
Hi there. I'm glad to hear about your Ancestry.com show. My cousin did We Three Sisters DNA, and it came out that my son apparently had a relationship with a girl when he was about 20, and nobody knew that she was pregnant. Anyway, the young lady has been looking for family, and we found her in Chicago, and I'm her grandmother. And I'm so pleased that she found us, or we found her. She has two, a half-brother and a half-sister that we did the DNA on, and it matches.
Oh, so that's a good result for you, Marlene.
Very good, because her mother doesn't really care what happens to her, but this grandmother does.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. Well, it's nice to hear the positive results from some of this, Mary. John in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, John.
I wanted to ask a question. Does the business that you submit your sample to essentially own your DNA after it leaves your mailbox? And I ask this question because I understand with some individuals the DNA sequence might be valuable to medicine, and I'm wondering, do I still retain ownership, or have I given up that right?
When you test, you own your DNA. And when you test, it's important to read the terms of service for the company you're testing with in terms of what they can do with the results. So they're only looking at 700,000 places on your DNA, and you have 3 billion bases. So it's really a minority of the DNA you have. And it's important. So it's not enough information, for example, to clone you. But it's really important to read the terms of service, because then you'll know what they can and cannot do with the results. And the results, of course, are different than the DNA itself. And there are also usually options for things like, I believe 23andMe asks you to participate in medical research. And if you agree to that, then you answer questions and you get surveys all the time. So it just depends upon the company in terms of what they can do with the results. But again, you own your DNA.
There are clear directions, or there are clear statements as to what they can and can't do.
In the terms of service.
In terms of service. Okay. All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, just a really quick story. My cousin's really into genealogy, has written a couple of books, one on our mutual relative, Henry Sewell, who came from Coventry, England. In doing further DNA research, he found that our family, the males, we carry a certain marker called a haplomarker, which for some reason a lot of Bulgarians have. And in doing further research, he found that in the couple centuries B.C., when the Romans invaded Britain, they sent a legion of Thracians, which is now Bulgaria, to what is now Coventry. And so he actually was able to trace back the DNA, from which we thought was mostly English in that area, to actual Bulgarians from the 1st or 2nd century B.C., which I thought was kind of interesting research. Anyway.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. That's pretty cool stuff, Mary.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You know, if you think about England and how much they've been invaded, you know, it's not surprising that those things show up in our DNA.
Yeah, thank you so much. Let's go to Mark in Franklin next. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Two things real quick. I was tested by 23andMe a long time ago, just before they couldn't release the medical stuff anymore. Now I guess you can. Is Ancestry.com the same? And my other question is when somebody finds something new with genetics, something that they didn't understand before, now this means something and we didn't know what it meant before, does my file get updated?
So the question about is Ancestry the same, is that with respect to the medical information, the health information?
Both.
Both. Right now, Ancestry is not offering any health information, but we expect them to do so probably this year. And then in terms of updating results, if you test, then you'll get your results. So you'll get your ethnicity estimates and your matches. And as more matches come into the database, those will be added to your match list. And if the company updates their ethnicity information, so for example, now Ancestry has these migrations, which are much more recent migrations. So for example, if you have New York settlers, that is probably within the last couple hundred years. And in contrast, some of the ethnicity information like Great Britain, that could be 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. But as these companies are offering new things like these migrations or they update their algorithm, then you get new ethnicity estimates.
Oh, there we go. Thank you very much for calling. Jill in Cedarburg emailed to say that she was surprised to see 24% Scandinavian in her DNA. Unfortunately, she was unable to get much more info on the specific country or region of Scandinavia or migration patterns. Is she missing something when looking online? Any tricks? Is it worthwhile putting in her family tree to obtain more info, or does she need to sign up for the Ancestry Genealogy service for that to be helpful?
Well, I have a couple of suggestions, and one is that to look through your match list. So, for example, if you have 24% Scandinavian, look through the match list and see, are there people who have Norwegian or Swedish names? And if that is true, then I would say, you know, that's consistent with your ethnicity information. If you build a tree, then and you build a tree on Ancestry, then you might be able to figure out at what point your ancestors were in Scandinavia, assuming they were. And so it definitely is great to have a tree in place. I encourage people to do that.
All right. Thanks very much for that question. Amy on Facebook says her husband is an adoptee, used his DNA to find his biological father, submitted his DNA to I'm not seeing what, GenMatch, I think, or something like that.
GenMatch
Family Tree. And used your service, DNA Hunters. He found his biological father, but he had passed away in 1977. But he found two half-brothers and a half-sister who he was able to connect with.
Yes. Oh, great. So, Amy, thank you. I know you're on Facebook, but thank you very much. I posted this morning to say I would be interviewed, and right, her husband worked with me, and he's an adoptee, and looking for his biological father. In Wisconsin, you can get your birth certificate if you're an adoptee. So once you turn 18, you can do that. But a lot of times, what happens is it will say father unknown, and that's when we turn to DNA to figure that out. So. And this is another great reunion story. I just received a photograph of the client and his half sister, so smiling at dinner. So I feel so lucky to be able to do this work.
It could be very, very, or it is very rewarding work. Talking today with our guest Mary Eberle, and her company is DNA Hunters. She helps find biological parents and relatives. Question about DNA testing or about genealogy? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Do you have advice for... in this situation you just mentioned, for reaching out to people, is there a procedure or a good way to go about this? What do you recommend?
Well, in terms of more distant matches, so let's say you get a second or a third cousin match.
Yeah.
A lot of times we're being upfront, we're saying, I'm an adoptee, and so on, and just, you know, saying, could you please help me? When it gets to be closer, like reaching out to a half-sibling that has no idea that you exist, then there is a, specific things I recommend, including, you know, when you reach out saying, what an outstanding person you are. You know, you're a grandma, you're a, you know, an older person in your city, that kind of thing.
Talk about yourself.
Talk about yourself. Talk about, right, that you're financially stable. Yeah. And then also to say also what you want. So, for example, you know, I just think people, when they get those kinds of mail, they're thinking, this this person wants a handout, right? So I'm financially stable. And, you know, maybe you just want pictures. Maybe you just want to know. You know, maybe you want them to test to confirm this hypothesis that this is the half-sister. So...
And you might be willing to pay for that.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. That helps.
So you've had, have you had pretty good luck with that in terms, I mean, have folks had pretty good luck that way?
Mm-hmm. In finding parents and siblings?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For the most part.
For the most part. I, you know, I had one client, she was born in Vietnam to a Vietnamese mom. Her dad was an African-American Vietnam soldier. And, you know, that one, that finding her biological father, the Vietnam vet, was really difficult. You know, it, you know, you go into the census records and before the Civil War, African-Americans were not listed. So it can be tough. It just, it depends upon how good your matches are and how good the trees are. But it happens all the time.
Were you able to help that person out?
Yes. Yes, we found him.
Okay. Mabel in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Thank you very much for calling.
Yes, thank you. About 4 years ago, I did my search with 23andMe, and I was so surprised to find out I was related to Jesse James. But when I thought of it a little more, I thought my mother's family are kind of like a bunch of hillbillies. So I asked my cousin, my mother's nephew, if he would do it, and he did the test, and he's related to Jesse James as well. So I know it comes through on my mom's side. But I just thought that was fun to find out.
It's got to be fun to find out things like that. Do you have any examples, Mary, of folks that have had sort of similar kinds of things happen to them?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
But that's a pretty good one, Mabel.
Thank you. That's great.
Thanks very much for calling. Diane in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I am adopted, and I found both of my biological parents. They are divorced. My biological father says my great-great-grandmother was Native American, but he doesn't know what tribe. My birth mother says he's making that up. Would it show if I had that test? Would it show if I had Native American blood and possibly which tribe?
It definitely would not show which tribe. And sometimes it shows up and sometimes it doesn't. But I think as your biological mom pointed out, there are a lot of stories of Native American heritage that we... a lot of families have, and I would say the majority of the time, that's what it is. It's a story. But if you definitely can do DNA testing, and it may show up.
Where would in her case, what would be the best one for her? In other words, is there one place that has more Native Americans being tested, or
the best place? Is 23andMe.
23andMe.
For that.
Okay, there you go, Diane. Thanks a lot for calling. And Linda in Prairie du Chien, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. I was in here listening, and I was wondering if, as an adoptee, you're looking for your biological parents or family members, do they have to have their DNA in the pool that you're searching to be able to match them?
No. You can have cousin matches or aunts and uncles. It's a matter of looking at the trees, and then we build the trees back in time to see where the matches are overlapping. So let's say you have matches who all have these great grandparents. And then you build the tree forward in time, because ultimately your biological parent should be one of their descendants. So in the end, we like to get a closer match. So we'll oftentimes ask a half sibling or a niece or nephew to test, or the biological parent if they're still around. No. So it's more, that just is the icing on the cake and the confirmation.
There we go. Thank you, Linda. Thanks very much for calling. So what would you like listeners to keep in mind when it comes to this kind of testing? Are there things that we ought to keep in the front of our mind or maybe in the back?
Well, definitely one thing is that, as I said earlier, just, be prepared, because you might find something that you did not expect to see. And also to let other people know that they might find something. And now we're having to let people know, when we ask them to test, that the police are looking through these databases. So to get their informed consent is important. Also being educated about this, how DNA works. And there's a lot of materials available online through the DNA testing companies and YouTube, and video downloads you can do. And next, on June 9th, I'm participating in Midwest DNA, which is going to be an all-day DNA workshop with leading DNA educators. So that's an example of something you can do.
So when, give us the location and so forth for that.
Sure. It's a virtual conference. It's out of Chicago. I'm working with Thomas McKenty. And so you can listen anywhere. He and I do workshops, and we did one last Saturday. Someone in New Zealand was on the workshop, where it was probably 2 a.m, but she was on. She was on. So it's exciting. There are a lot of educational resources, and it'll help you understand what your results mean.
And the results, in terms of, I forget what I paid for Ancestry DNA. Was it $49 or something? I think I forgot.
Yeah, I think it went as low as $59.
Okay. I couldn't remember. It's been a while now since I've had it done. So for $59, and I'm sure the other ones are probably about the same in terms of cost.
The full price is usually around $99.
But if you get the whole enchilada, so to speak.
or the non-sale price. So,
I see.
We had just a tremendous number of kits sold over the Black Friday holiday. And so those were the 59, and maybe the 59 price was a little bit longer, but yeah. I would say more like 99.
Well, it was fun talking with you today, Mary. We'll have to do it again. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry.
And by the way, you have a site of your own?
Yes.
What's your site?
It is dnahunters.com.
DNAHunters.com. Mary Eberle, our guest today, and her company is called DNA Hunters. She helps find biological parents and relatives. They also help clients understand their DNA test results. I've got a few results in front of me from my testing. It was a lot of fun, actually, to be able to do it, and I'm going to follow up, I think. Some of those that I've got, I didn't know I had any Irish in there, but there's a James Campbell that could be he could be from Scotland or Ireland, and we'll probably be viewing his matches and see what's there. Well, we're going to switch from DNA to strokes. This is May is National Stroke Awareness Month, so we thought we'd bring back a couple of guests, Dr. Luke Bradbury and Chris Welly, to talk with us about dealing with strokes, and you'll find out all about that next here on the Ideas Network.